Hello, everyone, and welcome to the SoxProspects.com podcast, episode number 75. I think that's supposed to be important or something, but we screwed up the numbering at some point a long time ago, so it's probably more like episode 80. Don't get too worked up about it. Anyways, thank you for hitting the download button. We appreciate it as we turn the calendar to June. My name is Chris Hatfield, coming to you from Sox Prospects. I think we were deciding to call it Mid-Atlantic / South here in our nation's capital on a sunny Saturday afternoon, May 30th. I am joined, as always, by our managing editor, Matt Hegel. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Chris. How's it going? Good to talk to you guys.
Thanks for joining us. And as always, our director of scouting, Mr. Ian Kundle. Hello, Ian.
Hi, guys. How are we doing today?
If it sounds like there's a little bit of anger in Matt and Ian's voices, that is because I accidentally stopped recording 39 seconds in the first time we tried to do this and realized it about 20 minutes in. We've practiced the first segment of the show, so that's good. Like I said, thank you all for downloading. If you want to help the podcast and help the website, do us a favor, subscribe on iTunes or on Stitcher if you use either of those. Rate us if you use them, I believe. I don't know if Stitcher has ratings, but iTunes definitely does. It helps people get ears on the show. If you don't use either of those, consider doing so. I use both. Love both of them. Stitcher is an app you can use on your phone. Whether or not you have an Android or Apple phone, or maybe you're one of the weirdos who has a Windows phone, or maybe you have a dumb phone, in which case I don't know what to tell you. I'm a big fan of Stitcher. And then iTunes, obviously you can use that. If you're one of the few people left in the world like me who still uses an iPod, easy way to just throw podcasts onto that bad boy so you can still listen while you're down in the subway, for example. We appreciate it. We do everything on the website free of charge, so we appreciate you spreading the word, at least getting the word out there about the site, growing the empire that is SoxProspects.com. Quick note of what the itinerary is today. First, we're going to talk about our new rankings. By the time you hear this, or at least shortly after you hear this, we'll be updating the website's rankings, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. It's a good conversation. Trust me, I just listened to it. We're also going to talk a little bit on a couple of things that dovetailed nicely with a couple of emails we got from our listeners. As always, if you've got an email that you want to send to us, have a question, comment, something you want to hear us talk about, podcast@soxprospects.com. Again, that's podcast@soxprospects.com. Send that in. We will read your question on the podcast and respond to it. First topic we'll hit on is the pitchers in Pawtucket, which is, very nicely, we saw the debut of Eduardo Rodriguez against the Texas Rangers this week, 7 2/3 scoreless with 7 strikeouts. Looked great. But he's also got Brian Johnson right behind him and Henry Owens. What's the deal with him too? We'll talk about those guys. And we'll also talk about something that comes up this time of the year, every year, promotions. When it's right for the organization to start thinking about promoting a guy, what needs to happen before the time is right? What factors go into that decision? We'll talk about all of those. But let's hop right into our discussion of the new website rankings. Those will go up on, like I said, either the 31st of May or the 1st of June, sometime in there. And once again, we've got some movement in the top 10. We have, obviously, staying at 1 and 2, our Blake Swihart and Yoan Moncada, who made his debut on May the 18th. So he's a couple weeks in, already got hurt once and missed a couple games, tweaking his hamstring, but I think he's back in the lineup now. So playing second base in Greenville. He stays at number 2. Moving up from 4 to 3 is Eduardo Rodriguez, who I just mentioned. Great debut this week. Come moving up right behind him from 6 to 4, Rafael Devers, who we, even though we explained this last time that we are not, in fact, down on Devers when we dropped him from 5 to 6, because Manuel Margot and Rodriguez passed him last time. Devers, who seems to be the favorite / most likely choice in our monthly poll on the forum for player of the month for May. Had a great May. He's tearing the cover off the ball. As I mentioned last time, I saw him hit what are still his only 2 home runs of the year up in Hagerstown. He moves up to 4, moving down from 3 to 5, Manuel Margot, moving from 5 to 6 is Henry Owens, and staying at number 7 is Brian Johnson. Those guys, Margot, a little bit of a slow month, plus he's been on the DL since May the 13th with shoulder soreness, and is apparently an intercostal injury. He is in extended spring training, by the way, getting at bats. Should be back, one would think, in a couple of weeks. at the longest, more likely in about a week or so. Like we said, Henry Owens moves down to 6. Brian Johnson stays at number 7, and we'll talk, like I said, we'll talk about them in our second segment. And then from 8 to 10, we flipped numbers 8 and 10. Michael Kopech moves up to 8. Michael Chavis moves down to 10 around the consistently number 9, Matt Barnes. So we'll talk about all those things. Gentlemen, if you can remember what our thoughts were on this from the first time we talked about it, Matt, top 10, your thoughts on maybe potential tiering in that grouping of players.
Yeah, so for me, you know, there's obviously the 1-2 tier sort of by themselves. And then after that, for me, sort of the Eduardo Rodriguez through 3 through 7 through Brian Johnson is sort of one tier to me. So I don't really see it as, you know, what guys clearly separating themselves. I mean, Rodriguez and Devers definitely performed big this month and sort of did open some eyes. But, you know, for Margot, for instance, I think I kind of think that the injury maybe affected him a bit before he actually went on the DL. So his numbers maybe came down a little bit. And especially with, like, the pitchers with you know, like Owens versus Johnson, which I know we'll talk about more later. It's not so much that, you know, I know there's some argument or a little disagreement whether we should do Owens or Johnson's first. I think we kind of all decided that Owens should be first, but
it's closer than it was.
Yeah, exactly. And there's some question, but even me, who I actually voted for Johnson ahead of Owens, it wasn't anything against Owens. I don't think, like, you know, his performance hasn't, you know, it hasn't been good, but it hasn't thrown me off at all, or sort of discouraged me at this point. It's just that I really kind of like Brian Johnson. So to me, it's not, you know, it's not, no one's really getting killed or pushing anyone huge in that range. It's just, it's sort of a tier with Rodriguez and Devers at the top, but definitely sort of all within that same tier.
And we'll talk a little bit about potential reasons for Owens, you know, maybe statistics not really looking like they've looked in the past too when we talk about the Pawtucket pitchers. Ian. Your thoughts on that? I think you maybe don't necessarily quite agree with that general assessment.
Yeah, that's a good call, actually. Like we've talked about this before.
It's like we've talked about it already.
Yeah, I think that there's a tier within that tier, if that makes sense, in the sense that I have Eduardo Rodriguez and Rafael Devers ahead of the rest of those guys. And for me, mainly it comes down to just that those two have by far the highest ceiling of the guys that Matt listed. For Rodriguez, what separates him from the other two pitchers for me is a couple things. First off, it's fastball. He's got by far the most velocity out of all those guys. We saw it in his major league debut. I think he sat 94, 95 most of the game and was still hitting 96 in the eighth inning. And he just has a fastball that neither Owens or Johnson has, so he has more margin for error with the pitch. And then he's also, I think, the biggest that he's shown significant improvement with his secondary, especially consistency with his changeup and slider. And so when you just look at his total package, it's easy to see that he could be a potentially as high as maybe a number 2 starter versus I just don't think either Owens or Johnson has that type of ceiling. They're more back end starters for me, you know, number 4 type guys, maybe a number 3 at best. And then similarly with Devers. If everything turns out right with Devers, he has the ceiling of one of the best hitters in the big leagues. I mean, we're talking about a guy who just on raw tools alone, it could be like 6 hit, 6 power, and that might be even a little light. I mean, he just knows how to hit. He's got a great swing, and if the cards fall right, you know, you could be looking at someone who hits close to 300 with 25 plus home runs a year, and right. There aren't many guys in the big leagues who could do that. And Manuel Margot, yes, he's a very nice prospect, but he just doesn't have that type of offensive ceiling. And for that, that just pushes Devers. Obviously, Margot's the better defender, but in the game right now, so starved with offense that when you have a prospect with Devers' potential skill set, that's just too much to pass it up. And I think it just pushes him a little bit onto another level than Margot.
Right, right. No, that's fair. I like the discussion there. And I think for me, it's somewhere in between those, and that's the sort of thing that I find myself thinking about when figuring out how to order those guys. Maybe hitting a little bit on the Greenville guys that we haven't touched on yet. On the one hand, you have Michael Kopech, who Kylie McDaniel saw him the other night, was talking about on Twitter how he was sitting 94 to 97. Has really cleaned up his mechanics, Ian, as you've talked about in the past. You know, he's a guy who they, you know, went in and redid some of his mechanics right away, and he's throwing strikes. He's only got 11 walks in 32 and two-thirds innings, which isn't amazing necessarily, but it's still a lot better than he had done in the past. In the meantime, he's striking out 38 guys in 32 and two-thirds, so more than a batter an inning. And getting some results. We're not saying it's results-based. It's what's going into those results that is part of why he's moving up. Meanwhile, kind of same idea with Michael Chavis moving down. He's hitting for some power. He's got a 358 slugging percentage on a 204 batting average. So that isolated power of 154 is good. You like to see that from a guy his age in Greenville. But, striking out a lot more than you would like to see from a guy even necessarily for being that young at the level he in. I've got the numbers right here, in 137 at bats, has struck out 50 times, and that leads a team on a team full of guys who are striking out a lot. For example, Javier Guerra, who we'll talk about in a little bit, 45 strikeouts and 133 at bats. Those guys kind of leading the way on the strikeouts, but they've got other guys in that lineup who strike out a lot too. He's got some things to work on, but it's not a reason to panic or anything like that. I think we all agreed that there was a relatively clear top 10 for us that included those 10 players. So, we're not down. We're not saying he's terrible. We're not saying he's in danger of free falling down the rankings. For me, next month, if he moves down, it's because the number 7 pick wound up being a guy we ranked in the top 10. But otherwise, I really can't necessarily see him falling too much more. No matter how he performs, unless the bottom completely falls out or something, or he does something stupid off the field or something like that. In the next 11 to 20 range, we're not necessarily always going to go in and discuss this grouping on its own. We didn't last month, but to me, and I think you guys kind of agreed, it was the top 10. Devin Marrero at 11. We were consensus on Javier Guerra at 12. And then from there, it was Trey Ball at 13, and then Shruggy Face, to steal the line that Ian used the first time we recorded this. Within that grouping, we had Guerra, as I mentioned, and Mauricio Dubon moved up. Garen Cecchini moved down a couple spots. It maybe, went from being a more secure number 13 to a tenuous 15. And then Sean Coyle moved down from 15 to 25 after a month in which he didn't hit before getting hurt in the middle of the month and going on the DL. And as a guy who has had concerns about durability in the past, I'm actually more worried about the getting hurt again rather than the fact that he wasn't necessarily hitting a month and a half into the season. Bats tend to heat up as the season goes on. Thoughts about the kind of grouping there, gentlemen, and what do we make of the fact that some of these guys are doing great? There really isn't anyone standing out, I think, in that group.
I think what separates these guys from the top 10 is, save for Javi Guerra, there isn't really anyone in this next range that projects as anything more than like a second division player at best. Guerra, because of his defense, if he can hit enough, that's a first division profile. But other than that, you've got a couple guys like Teddy Stankiewicz, who's back-end starter projection, Trey Ball, who could be a little more if things go right, but as of now, based on the looks that we've got and talking to people, it's more a back-end projection. And then with the bats, it's a lot of second division or utility profiles with Asuaje, Dubon, Wendell Rijo, Sam Travis. They all have questions, and there's just no one that really – there's no standout performers in that list. It's just a lot of you could make a case for any of them in any order, really, after about 14. Because I actually look back and everyone who contributed to the rankings, we all had the exact same first 13 names.
Yep.
And then after that, it's just whatever. Figure it out.
Yeah, and I think it says something that a lot of those guys, the only guys in that group, I guess you could say Bryce Brent's held steady at 19 because he's once again hitting for some power and not for a lot of average, which is Bryce Brent's. But a lot of guys who are in Salem or Greenville, and I think that's part of it. It's, if Wendell Rijo shows he can hit in Double-A with that setup he has, then he's a much different, or he's a different looking, maybe not much different, but he looks a little bit different than he does in Salem with pretty good numbers, especially for his age, and so forth with those guys who are that low in the rankings. I forgot to mention again, Carlos Asuaje moved up from, I think, 28 to number 20 in the next rankings. No, 27, sorry, to 20 in the next rankings. So he also moved up a little bit, being Carlos Asuaje, who I think we should mention. Jared Carabas, I will say his name one more time for you, Carlos Asuaje. And you had mentioned, Ian, you know, high baseball IQ, he'll be a utility guy, although, you know, he's actually playing a lot more second base this year. He's playing mostly second base, but that could have a lot more to do with the team's composition than anything. But you had said, you know, scouts like him, but as a utility guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the guys that you go into Portland and you'll talk to people who've seen them, and they'll be like, they want to talk about him. Yep. But then you get to the end of it, and it's like, but I mean, yeah, I think he's a very good player, and but just mm-hmm. as a utility guy, like I don't want him. You know, he's not a guy that you project as an everyday starter for.
Right.
For a big league team, but at the same time, he's a guy who could be extremely valuable off the bench, playing primarily second base, but also with, you know, in a pinch, he could play some third base, some left field. He doesn't do anything great. He just can get on base. He can play defense, just grinds out at bats. Just a great guy to have on the roster. Mm-hmm. And, every system needs those type of guys. And it's kind of, I think it's one of those things that gets undervalued in terms of the national media, because everyone's looking for the next, you know, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, whatever. But it's the guys like Carlos Asuaje that make up. There's more guys like Carlos Asuaje than there are, you know, those top five, you know, generational prospects, obviously. And they're the ones that are going to win you championships and, you know, that make up the roster, the majority of the roster.
On Guerra, I think that I had him at the same place as everyone else. But at the same time, I think that the hitting is a bit of a mirage. His strikeout rate is really high right now, and his batting average on balls in play is .435, which is also very high, which, you know, shows that he's probably gotten a bit lucky. But obviously with the defense, you sort of to go along with any sort of hitting, I think really you know, you can't really deny that at that point. To go along with that, we mentioned Coyle. Coyle had a really, the opposite, really low batting average on balls in play. So I think he got a little unlucky. So for me, I moved him down as well, but I think it really has a lot to do with the DL stints, which I think everyone agreed with. But he's really had injury troubles. So, and, you know, he doesn't, like we're talking about with all these guys, really not a high ceiling there either way. But he's always been an interesting player to me, at least. And then the other guy was Mauricio Dubon. I thought was interesting because I ended up pushing him up, I don't know, probably around 15 or 16, but I didn't feel that strongly about him. I still feel like he has a lot to prove.
Yep.
But at the same time, like we were talking about, there wasn't really anyone else who sort of grabbed a hold of it, or really everyone in that range kind of either underperformed or just sort of, middle.
Has questions. Middling.
Yeah.
Has questions.
Yeah, questions, exactly.
Yep. And just to kind of piggyback on that a little bit, Guerra, a huge grain of salt that minor league batted ball numbers or batted ball statistics are horribly unreliable. But that said, when you're looking at average and balls in play, Guerra is at least leading the drive and line drive percentage, pun intended, at 27%, almost 28%. So that said, his average on balls in play is still kind of unsustainable, but it isn't like it's going to come down to 250. Conversely, if you look at Coyle, yes, his batting average on balls in play will go up, but line drive percentage 13%. So you would expect that to only go up to maybe around 23, 24, or 30 to 40 in average on balls in play. So, you know, these guys could stand and maybe hit the ball a little bit more. Sean Coyle, by the way, 18% infield pop-up rate. Just pop-up percentage. So that's pretty high.
Well, that kind of fits with his swing, though, because he's not very big, but it's a really long swing and it's a big uppercut.
Right.
So he's trying to leverage everything out to the outfield in the air. And as a result, you're going to pop a lot of balls up.
Yeah. You compare that with another guy who's struggling in Garrett Cicchini, 2% pop-up percentage. So, you know, big variance right there on those two guys. But just some numbers that I had ready to mention before I realized that we were not, in fact, recording. And then real briefly, we'll just mention guys who are movers and shakers in the back end of the rankings in 20 to 60. You guys could check those out. Again, the top 20 rankings are on SoxProspects.com on the front page. And then if you go, there's a link at the top to prospects 21 through 60. A couple few guys who moved up and a few guys who moved down that we kind of wanted to touch on real quick. Moving up big were Pat Light, Ty Buttrey, Joe Gunkel. Ian, I know you have reports on at least a couple of those guys.
They all are looking like big league bullpen arms, especially Light. Light's been the revelation this year. Mm-hmm. I wrote about him actually recently in a scouting scraps last week. But the biggest change for him this year is he's basically he shelled the slider and his changeup. He's just going with a splitter as his primary secondary option. And both the slider and the changeup weren't very good, if we're being honest. I mean, the slider had some potential, but both were very inconsistent. You don't have a lot of feel for either. And the splitter is just a completely different story. It's a pitch he's very confident in. It's something he threw in college, but he shelved when he got to the big leagues to work on his other pitches. And it's showing as a plus offering. And his velocity is still there. I saw him up to 97. I know someone who's seen him up to 98. And when you've got a double plus fastball and a potential, you know, plus splitter out of the bullpen, that's a late inning guy. I'm not sure it's a closer projection for a few reasons, namely he still needs to work on his command and the fastball is still straight as an arrow. But I think it could be a very good eighth inning option with that pitch mix. And going in, you know, last year, I mean, I don't have it up, but he didn't miss any bats last year.
Right.
And this year is just a completely different story. He's getting strikeouts. He's minimizing the walks, minimizing the hits. And he just looks like a completely different player.
Mm-hmm. Ty Buttrey moved from, I think, like 43 up into the top 30. So John Mioli, our senior columnist emeritus, caught Buttrey the other day. What'd you hear from him?
Yeah, he said his velocity's back. I think that's the biggest thing. He was 92, 94. I think he topped out at 96. And his curveball was working. It's knuckle curveball. He's always had that pitch. It's just the fastball velocity has just came and went. Like, I saw him last year a few times in Lowell, and he was 86, 88, 88, 90. You know, there was nothing up in the mid-90s. And the fact that his velocity's back, what Mioli saw kind of it's been a couple other people I've talked to have seen similar from him. And it's just he's starting. This could be him turning the corner and finally, you know, starting to show the stuff that was why the Red Sox gave him, I think, $1.4 million out of the draft.
1.3 and as a fourth round pick in the 2012 draft out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Let me also mention, and you know, Matt, talk about any of these guys you want, but some guys who moved down: Luis Diaz, who just kind of middling results, if not good results in Portland in their rotation. Simon Mercedes, who had moved to the bullpen this year, we were kind of excited about both him and Light in that bullpen. And whereas Light has excelled, Mercedes has just kind of not really had the same results that Light has, at the very least. It looks like he'll be in Portland all year. And then some other guys who moved down because of injury, you know, Edwin Escobar fell out of the top 20, although he apparently is throwing on flat ground at this point, I believe, or I always forget if it's him or Workman that I read reports.
No, he's throwing on flat ground.
He is throwing on flat ground, okay. Henry Ramos, who had his second season-ending leg injury, we talked about that last time. It's almost like you want to take him off the board at this point because who knows, maybe he comes back and becomes top 30 fringe top 20 guy again, or maybe he's just never the same after losing 2 years of development. And then Jacob Dahlstrand and Daniel McGrath, who were both throwing well in Salem before heading to the DL. My understanding is that neither is with the team at this point, that they're in Florida rehabbing. So that's kind of the big list of movers and shakers, along with, like I guys mentioned, Light, Buttrey, and Gunkel moving up. Matt, any thoughts on guys in that range that you wanted to mention?
Well, I'd also mention that we were able to graduate Stephen Wright finally, which is nice because it's a lot of internal and external arguments about really where he should rank. So
yes,
it's a big headache off our plate, I'd say. But yeah, among those guys who moved, I think you mentioned Luis Diaz and Simon Mercedes. Especially Diaz is a guy, he's put up good numbers in the past, but we never really heard good things from scouts or never that they matched the numbers that he was putting up. And so he was always kind of a little hard to rank because some of his numbers were really good, and even his strikeout numbers, which you don't see as much with guys the scouts don't like necessarily. But he's been absolutely terrible this year, and it almost makes me wonder if there's some kind of injury there or something. Not that I want to speculate on that, but you know, I'm really wondering what's up with him. But I was never high on him anyway based on scouting looks. It seems like maybe he's a middle reliever profile, or maybe, you know, maybe a slightly higher ceiling than that, or maybe swingman ceiling. Mercedes, somewhat similar, but well, different, but they moved him to relief this year. And, that always seemed like the ticket for him, and sort of the opposite of Pat Light, where he's really taken to the role. Mercedes has had some up and down and been inconsistent. And, you know, we've heard really good reports, and obviously, you know, Ian's seen him, and a lot of people have seen him at this point, and he's, you know, he's got some good stuff, but just doesn't seem like he's going to really, well, I shouldn't say he's going to put it together, but just at this point, it's not coming together. Yeah, exactly. He's not taking off in that role, which is what you really wanted to see.
Right, in the way that, say, Light had. So it's interesting with those guys. Yeah, to me, it's just kind of, we mentioned this before we recorded, but before we recorded, and it's just kind of from, honestly, from 21 to 60, yeah, there's kind of a general slope up in talent of how good guys are at the top versus the bottom, but, you know, there's a reason that guys move within that range, as many as 10 spots in a given month, whereas you're not going to see a guy move from 18 to 5 on the rankings. That just, you know, incrementally each slot gets less important. You know, where a guy being ranked 45 versus 58 means almost nothing to me. You know, a guy being ranked 31 versus 37 means almost nothing to me. So, you know, take those rankings with a grain of salt, I guess, is the point of what I'm saying. So that's the June 1st rankings.
Can I add one thing on there?
Of course.
There were just two guys who I think jumped into the top 60 who weren't in it before, or three actually. I think we should briefly mention, I think Ben Moore, Jordan Procession, and I just wanted to add William Cerez into that. I think Moore and Procession, neither of them were in the top 60. And Chris, you got to see, you saw Moore, right?
Procession. I saw Moore catching, yeah, which he had a very slow pop time. So he's still working on the defense behind the plate, but he can hit.
Yeah, he's not a good catcher at this point. I think I mentioned this in the preview before, but I saw him make like four errors in one game, a spring training game this year, a catcher.
Yep.
But anyway, he can just really hit, and that's the thing. I mean, and it makes sense. He's a college guy from the SEC. I think he went to Alabama. And
4-year guy, right?
Yeah, no, 3-year guy.
Was he 3 years? Okay.
But he's a recent convert to catcher. He played outfield in college, and it's just one of those things where his bat's ready for Salem, but the defense is not at all. So he kind of has to work on it in Greenville. But I think the biggest one was Procession was someone I saw on the hole last year, and I mean, it didn't really stand out and do that much for me. But the reports on him have been very good from guys who have seen in Greenville. The scouts have really liked him. And he's a catcher who can hit a little bit, and he plays good defense, hustles every play. You know, a grinder type, and he's someone that I think we did underrank before, and kind of correcting that this time.
Yeah, well, if I could just jump in, it's tough because, you know, you've got Moore, who's an 8th rounder. Procession was a 14th rounder out of Northern Kentucky, who had transferred.
He's from Canada.
Well, he's from Canada. He went to Northern Kentucky.
Okay, yeah.
After transferring from he went to high school in Canada, and he went to a JUCO before transferring to Northern Kentucky. So he's got kind of a interesting sort of path. So it's, you know, it's tough when you're getting a 54 at bat look in Lowell. And then he went up to Greenville last year for 9 games. And just kind of like shrug.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he's
it's just one of those. But he's just someone who I've talking to people who've seen Greenville, they really like him. Mm-hmm. And then the last guy was just William Cerez, who, just briefly, I mean, we all know the story, the second round pick who's now in the bullpen, and he's doing what he does in the bullpen, and he throws strikes and he throws hard from the left side, and those are two things, well, you can't teach that. So scouts like him. I mean, he's not a starter. He's in the bullpen, but 40 strikeouts, 8 walks, and 36 innings. And from the left side, he's just someone who he has a chance now out of the bullpen, whereas at the plate, he was a lost cause.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And he, I mean, and there's pitchability there too, which you wouldn't expect from a converted outfielder.
Yeah, he has great feel for someone who the last time he pitched was high school before pro ball, obviously. So.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So, all right. Yeah, that's fair. Matt, anybody else before we move on?
No one off the top of my head.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll read a couple of emails to intro our next couple of segments, but don't really want to. We're not going to constrain ourselves necessarily to the, what's in the questions. The first one, we got an email from Andy, and Andy in Boston asks, curious for the scouts' perspective on Brian Johnson. Are there things he can still improve on in AAA, or is it more a matter of just getting more experience against better hitters and knowing what elements of his repertoire work / don't work against them? Cheers, Andy. Thanks for the email, Andy. We appreciate it. I know you've both seen Brian Johnson in Pawtucket, and I guess first we'll talk about Johnson because I think he's a guy that a lot of people have a hard time getting their head around. And we I know we hit on him a little bit on the, you know, it's four above average pitches, maybe average to above average pitches, above average control. It's, you know, above average pitchability, especially for a guy who was a two-way player in college at Florida before he was a first-round pick of the Red Sox. You know, what do we have with him? And then we'll talk a little bit more about when he and Eduardo Rodriguez and Henry Owens might be ready to help the Major League club.
Just first, worth mentioning that Johnson threw last night, so that would be Friday, six perfect innings with, I think, nine strikeouts.
The joke being that Eduardo Rodriguez lit a fire under his, you know, under his
rim. But I think you said it well, Chris. It's Brian Johnson. I mean, he's not someone when you look at him that he looks like he should be a great pitcher. He's just kind of looks like a guy out there. I mean, that's kind of a mean thing to say, but like when you look at him, he doesn't scream like, oh, this is a big league player right here, but he just does everything well. There's no really standout pitch, as you said. There's nothing that there's no real separator pitch or anything, but it's just he knows how to pitch, and he has four pitches that he can mix and throw, and he has the confidence in all of them to throw in any count. And he just gets the ball, throws it, goes out there, does his job very professionally. And it's just, I think it's one of those things that just gets underrated in that sense that, you know, everyone's looking for those top of the rotation, you know, big fastball type guys, and he's not that. I mean, he can dial it up I've seen him dial it up to 95 a few times before. But he's very fine. He's fine pitching, you know, 90, 92, because he can get outs that way and he can conserve energy and pitch deeper into games. And if you can do that, that's great. That's better. I'd rather have that than someone who's going to air it out and only last four innings.
Right.
And it's just he can go out there, the fastball, curveball, changeup, slider / cutter. It's kind of varies between the two.
Which we'll talk about, I'm sure.
Yeah, and he just knows how to pitch and get guys out, and just scouts are coming around on him. The first kind of got a hint of it last year, where you had to talk to a few people who said that they actually like him more than Henry Owens. And when you look at, you know, what Owens was doing last year in Portland, that might be a little surprising. But when you think about it more, I mean, it's just he has that polish that separates him from Owens. Owens definitely has things that he does better, but Johnson just has that polish, and as you said, his command is already significantly better. And he's definitely, with the way he's throwing right now, he's got to be, even though I don't think he's on the 40-man, he's not.
Owens is not on the 40-man, and neither is Johnson. Actually.
Yeah, I was talking about Johnson, but yeah, he's not on the 40-man, but he's got to, I mean, he's almost forcing their hand at this point with the way he's pitching.
Yeah, I've kind of looked at their 40-man situation as like, there is a spot that is open right now. And in over the past, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, they fluctuated from having 40 to as few as 37 guys on the 40-man roster. And it seemed like the second they had 40 guys on the 40-man, they opened a spot that they didn't really need by DFAing Jeff Bianchi back to AAA or waivers or trading him or whatever's going to happen with Bianchi. But it's almost like, yeah, because that's the Brian Johnson spot that he's going to need in a month or two. But maybe I'm kind of just putting the cart before the horse here. Matt, you've been in Pawtucket, you've talked with Johnson, you've talked with the coaching staff about Johnson, your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I really like Johnson a lot. As someone to really be able to reach his projected ceiling, potentially, you know, not someone who's, you know, necessarily an ace, like, you know, like Ian was just talking about. But I think the thing that gets, I don't know if it's underrated or just something you don't really see as much with prospects is his acumen and his smarts on the mound. I know when I was, you know, after the game, when I was talking to Bowles, you know, the manager, Kevin Bowles, that was one of the first things he mentioned was how he was able to adjust in the outing, especially he gave up a home run. I think it was in the third inning of the outing I saw, and that was the only run he ended up giving up. But afterwards, he was basically talking about how he was trying to establish that fastball early, and then he knew when he threw the pitch, it was a fastball, and he threw it, and he's kind of like, yeah, I knew it was just one fastball too many. And at that point, he started really going to his off-speed stuff a lot. And I really suggest, I don't normally push my own articles as hard, but just because of the quotes the quotes in it from him are really good. So I'd really suggest the article I wrote, reading it to see, you know, how the type of pitcher he is. Another thing I found interesting was he refers to his fourth pitch as a cutter, which us and most scouts have looked at as a slider. Not that, you know, it mentions in our report even that that it sometimes is more like a cutter, but I just found it interesting that he always referred to it as a cutter, and he just said that, you know, he throws it slower, more like a slider early in counts, and then later in counts for more of a strikeout or a you know, to finish the at bat, he throws it harder like a cutter. So that was interesting as a fourth pitch. But yeah, I mean, he just uses all four of his pitches, and it's like, you know, we have his curveball as his second best pitch, but the outing I saw, he was really using the changeup a lot and talked a lot afterwards. I think he said it was the best changeup he's thrown all year. So it's really kind of one of those things where a different off-speed pitch might be on different days, so he really has a lot of sort of margin for error and a lot to work with there.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess that leads me into, you know, some kind of considering Eduardo Rodriguez, Brian Johnson, and Henry Owens, who, you know, I don't really want to rehash everything we've written about those three on the news page of Sox Prospects, which is, of course, at news.soxprospects.com. There's some great stuff there from both of these guys, as well as Chaz Fiorino, our assistant director of scouting. We've got scouting looks. I think we've got something up from the past month on all three of them, scouting-wise, right, Ian?
Yeah, I'm actually, there's two things on Owens, I believe.
Right. One of the Owens ones is from this past week, and then yeah, there's at least one each on the other two.
And then there's one on Johnson, and there's Matt's article on Johnson, obviously. And then there's two scouting things on Rodriguez also. So we got you guys covered with all those guys.
Yeah. So make sure you guys check those out. And especially I like the Owens write up from this week, because Chaz has a couple of theories on Owens, who is walking more guys this year. He's still getting strikeouts and he's still not giving up any hits, but he's walking a lot more guys than he has since, I think, Greenville. And he posited that, part of that might be because we've read in the offseason about how Owens has been putting on muscle every offseason, because he's still very tall and lanky, but I mean, he was a string bean when drafted and now he is just plain tall and lanky, and about how that might be, correct me if I'm saying this wrong, not hindering his mechanics, but he's got to kind of learn to repeat his mechanics every time he adds that much weight, maybe is one way I might put it. And you know, that's part of, you know, commanding your pitches is when your mechanics are off, you have a harder time commanding. The other thing that was interesting is that it seems like he is not throwing his changeup nearly as much this season in an effort to work on A, the fastball command, and B, developing a third pitch. Those were the two major development needs that we've been pointing out since he was early in his Portland season, if not the prior years in Salem and Greenville. You know, he debuted a slider this year that he's still not throwing too much in games, but he's also throwing his curveball a lot more. And like I said, trying to establish the fastball command and try and working on those things. So it's almost the fact that he's willing to, well, maybe not willing to sacrifice the numbers, but willing to kind of not shelf the change up, but to get away from a pitch that he's very confident in, is that is by far his best pitch, to work on what he needs to work on. It's a very mature, I think, decision and an approach. So I guess I'll throw to you guys on the three of them. Maybe an ETA for them. When can they help? Maybe Eduardo Rodriguez is starting to answer that right now. But what do we expect as far as these guys getting up to the major league club and helping out? with the rotation being the issue that it's been.
As you so Rodriguez is up right now, and I
supposed to be for one start.
And now I think Farrell already said he started
well,
one set.
It's now become two starts, and who knows from there.
I mean, he's I said this during a radio spot I did last week, but I think he's already their third best starter. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just when you look at Porcello's ahead of him clearly, and I would still put Buchholz ahead of him just based on what he can do if he's right. But after that, I mean, Joe Kelly has done nothing. Wade Miley is fine, but he's a back-end guy. And then Stephen Wright is a back-end guy at best. Rodriguez has the potential to be this year like a mid-rotation guy for them with more in the future potentially. And he's already there, and I don't see how you can send him back down at this point. You got to give him a shot because there's no point in trading for something like, you know, a Cole Hamels type or a you need more than one starter, and Rodriguez could be a start of someone coming in to fix the rotation. But as for the other two, I think Johnson is clearly next in line. I think you guys would both agree on that.
Yep.
I could see him getting a call up any day now. It would not surprise me at all if at some point they decided to pull the plug on Joe Kelly. They called up Johnson and gave him a shot. The one hold up on that might be that they might not want three lefties in the rotation. But I think Johnson right now is in finishing school, basically. He's just biding his time in AAA. Owens, I do not see him getting a call-up at all this year. I don't think we'll see him at all until next year at the earliest, because he's got things to work on still, and I think the other two have clearly separated themselves this year.
Matt, I guess your agreement or disagreement on that, and I would also pose to you the question, have the Red Sox waited too long on pulling the trigger on Rodriguez and potentially on Johnson?
That's a good question. It's tough because like Joe Kelly, he's such a tease kind of. You know, you see the potential there, and like even now, I'm like, you know, is it time to pull him out? Like, I want to give him at least one more start. It's just if you pull him out at this point, he might never get a chance to start again. And then I don't know. I want to like Joe Kelly, but it's been so rough so far. So. You know, is Stephen Wright really worth keeping in over say Brian Johnson? I don't know. We'll see if he continues. He wasn't bad actually last night, other than the two home runs he gave up to Hamilton. But I don't think they've waited too long. But it's just been sort of a weird beginning to the season, all the pitchers have kind of been up and down, so there hasn't been a clear person to take out. But for the most part, I'd say I agree with what Ian said, that Johnson's ready now any day. I'd like to see that. But again, the rotation sort of needs to sort itself out. Mm-hmm. And then I also agree with him on Owens that he should basically be there all year. Maybe a September call-up if there's 40-man room or whatever, if it makes sense. But I like you said, with Owens throwing his changeup less and working on some other things, I really like to see that, because even in the minors, you know, it's hard not to look at results as the pitcher. You know, like you, going yep. into a start, you'll say, yeah, I want to work on my curveball. I want to throw my slider more. But then once you get into they get into jams, a lot of times they end up falling back and relying on what got them there. So I like to see that Owens is following through with that a little bit, even though the results haven't been there so far this year. So if that is what it proves to be, that he's really working on those other pitches, then that's the reason that sort of convinced me to keep Owens above Johnson in our rankings. So I really like to see that out of him.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And that's the same thing with me after kind of reading about that. I might've kept him above Johnson only because I don't think Johnson has passed him affirmatively yet. No doubter. So I think when we're in the top 10 and, you know, we're talking about, you know, where it's ranking does maybe not matter a little bit, but to me, I want, before I move Johnson ahead of Owens or anything that's similar like that, I want them to have passed them in my mind, not it's close. And I guess you're kind of like a tie goes to the runner, tie goes to the guy who was ranked ahead for me. I tend to agree with pretty much everything you guys said. I think Rodriguez might be up to stay. The thing that I want to see is if throwing as many fastballs as he threw in his debut, he is able to continue to have success, or if major leaguers, once video gets out on him, once they're able to prepare for it coming in, if, you know, will he be able to make the adjustment to going to this changeup more, going to the breaking ball a little bit more, and maybe adjusting how he throws. But that said,
I was going to say, a lot of the Rangers' best hitters are lefties as well. So, you know, Prince Fielder, Hamilton, off the top of my head.
Best hitter, Hamilton being a guy they just brought back. But yeah. But yeah, and the thing is,
two home runs last night.
And I think the thing with Rodriguez, too, is I think something that people forget sometimes, it's not that you can't develop in the majors. It's just whether or not a team can take dealing with you developing in the majors. And if Rodriguez, while still trying to figure out the changeup and breaking ball in the majors, is still their third best starter, then he needs to stay in the majors if the team is still attempting to make it to the playoffs, which they are. I mean, they're only – are they still three games back or is it four? I haven't checked this morning. But, I mean, it'll be different by the time this podcast gets released anyway. But they're still definitely within striking distance of the
–
three
games back.
Yeah, three games back. So there are – I think I checked the other day. At the time I checked, there were 13 teams in Major League Baseball that were more than three games back of a playoff spot. So this isn't a team that's like a sinking ship. This is a team that's got to figure it out, but they're by no means done. Moving on to our last topic, and I want to read an email from Trevor. Trevor asks us, or I guess states, been fascinated with Rafael Devers since we signed him. If he rakes in Greenville, is a promotion to Salem possible by season's end? Thank you for the email, Trevor. And I, you know, we talked a little bit about Devers. He is, in fact, raking. Looking at, I'll bring up his stats for the month of May. They're kind of silly, but that said, you know, looking at a guy who, here it is, in the month of May, in 22 games, he's hitting .371 with a .404 on base percentage, and he's slugging .573, 10 doubles, and like I said, those two home runs that came on the same day. When you've got a guy like Devers, or I guess generally, what factors when you guys are looking at a guy and wondering whether he'll get promoted, and do you consider in thinking whether it's time? And I guess along those same lines, do you think that the club looks at?
Well, I think it's like age and experience is a big part of it, especially having a certain baseline of games at each level, especially at that young age. You know, he's only 18 right now, so he's, I haven't looked it up, but I would say, I would think one of the youngest hitters in that league across the board. So, so he's already playing over his head. So for him, Devers, I don't see a promotion coming anytime soon. On the other hand, I wouldn't at all rule it out this season, but probably a late season promotion, perhaps if he keeps this up. But I mean, the other thing like that with that is that if he keeps this performance up, at some point you have to promote him, because it's just, you know, it's the numbers he's putting up right now are silly. So, you know, if he were to do this for another month, then maybe he would get the promotion in July, say, but he's just so young right now, and he's probably going to come back down to earth and go through a slump. So I wouldn't look at a promotion anytime too soon for him, unless he just goes crazy.
Yeah, I think Matt kind of hit it on the head. It's a case by case basis, but there's a combination of factors to play when it's age, previous experience, and then how they're performing at the level. And I mean, I think we've seen in the past that there are certain guys that they're more likely to push more aggressively, specifically when they're starting in the low minors, especially, you know, when they're starting out like a college guy in Greenville, for example. That's someone that we're likely going to see, you know, if they do well in the first 2 months, by June, they're going to be up a level. Similarly, when you have a guy repeating the level, like Ty Buttrey did to start this year, for example, he went to Greenville and I think he made, what, four or five starts, performed really well, boom, up to Salem. Like, those are the type of guys that you're going to see at the early season promotions. We don't really see them promote someone who started in their first go around at a level that are, save for college draftees, obviously, from the previous year, get promoted this soon during the season. And with Devers, it's kind of, what's the point of promoting him? I mean, is he's going to go up to Salem, which is a worse hitting environment, and the pitch, and as an 18-year-old, by far the youngest player in the league. And I don't think that's what he needs right now. What he needs is reps. He's never played a full season before. Last season, he missed part of the year through injury. and he didn't miss part of the year. He got injured in
the off season.
Yeah, he didn't have a full off season conditioning program or anything. And we're talking about a guy who, yes, he can hit, but he has a lot of things to work on defensively. And at Greenville, it's just a lower stress environment. And there he's going to be, I think it's, I don't know if this will factor in, but I like what they have going in terms of they have this infield that seems like it's going to be pretty set for the next couple of years in terms of promotion chains, where those guys are going to get used to playing together. And he doesn't have to play every day in Greenville at third base, which is a good thing for him, I think, at this point, because it gives him more time to work on things on the side. And it's just one of those things that, what's the point? Like, if he gets up to Salem this year versus starts there next year, it doesn't really change his ETA that much. So I'd rather see him go out there and succeed long term. It seems like what they tend to do with guys his age is they'll give him a promotion for the last, 2 weeks of the season or last 3 weeks of the season, just to get a taste of the level before they start their next year. And I think that's the most we'll see this year. I don't see any reason to promote him before then.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I've been trying to find, and I've been unsuccessful, but maybe for next time if I'm able to find it. At some point, I had done on our news page a sort of study in how many at-bats or innings pitched it takes before you can realistically think a guy is going to get promoted. I don't remember exactly what the numbers were, but I remember in terms of plate appearances, it was at least 300, except for rare occasions. Rafael Devers right now has 164 plate appearances in Greenville. He is the eighth youngest player in low A, the entire level of low A. So that's the Midwest League and the South Atlantic League. And I think that's it. Is there a third league? I think there's only two. I guess I could check that real quick. But
there's
at any
Midwest
rate,
Valley League. No, that is it. The Florida State League's high A. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's one of the youngest players at the level. Were he to be promoted to high A, he would be the youngest player at that level by about half a year. So it wouldn't, it wouldn't even be remotely close that he'd be the youngest player at the level. There's no rush to promote him. I think as fans, I say this all the time, we love when guys get promoted because it's exciting. They're moving up the ladder. They are closer to the majors. We are closer to seeing them on TV and Don and Jerry talking about something other than them. But, you know, it's exciting for us to see promotions. It's movement. It's not another game where you have a four at-bat sample to evaluate things by. It's news. But there's no rush. What's the point of promoting him to Salem now versus promoting him to Salem at the end of July? Not much. He's probably not starting next year in Portland. He's too young for that. For him to get a significant number of at-bats in Salem this year, and that's an end-of-July promotion does that. That's huge for a player that young in terms of his development. If he does that, he's probably a top 20 prospect in the game next year, especially if he succeeds in that promotion. It'd be impressive. There's no rush. To me, I mentioned this on our forum at forum.soxprospects.com. The only reason I could see for promoting him now, and I don't think this is enough reason to promote Devers, is the fact that you have both him and Michael Chavis on the same roster right now, splitting time at third base. And for that matter, keeping, say, Mauricio Dubon from playing any third base, because, you know, you need to get both Devers and Chavis the game reps at third. You know, when you've got Johan Moncada on the same roster as well, factoring into that middle infield crunch. Anyway, alleviating that pressure would be an argument for promoting Rafael Devers to Salem. If he were a year or two older, I could see it. But I don't think that's enough to outweigh the fact that he's still so young. He's still only got two home runs that he hit in the same game against bad pitching. To me, I wouldn't mind seeing him tap into the raw power a little bit more. He hit more home runs in half short seasons in the GCL and Dominican Summer League last year. So it's not even tapping into the power he has tapped into. Of course, part of that is facing better pitching. I think there's more we can see out of him at the level. I don't think he gets promoted until late July, the earliest. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he didn't get promoted this year. Generally, like I said, go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say, I think an interesting question might be who out of that infield will be first to be promoted, because it seems like Moncada would be the obvious one, but you know, he got a late start and he's not really, it's tiny sample size, but he hasn't performed gone crazy or anything yet. So, but I can't really think of anyone else who would be first either. So no. It seems like it'd still be Moncada to me.
Well, I could see, and I don't think they will, but I could see the Javier Guerra pushing the glove, pushing the bat because the glove is ready for Salem. Because the glove is ready for Salem, probably. The glove's probably ready for Double A at this point. But, it depends how fast they want to push that bat. I would like to see a larger sample size out of him. Guerra's got 150 plate appearances in Greenville. He's in the same boat as Devers. But maybe Guerra, I could see. But, again, I see no problem with leaving him in Greenville all year. I think that'd be fine. Then send him to Salem next year. Or maybe he gets the 2-week promotion to Salem to know what to expect next season. Especially depending on what happens with playoffs. In fact, I haven't looked at standings at all.
I was just going to say that Greenville has by far the best shot of making the playoffs. So,
yeah,
I don't.
Yeah.
Although, I guess Salem's in there.
There's second half too. So,
oh, right. I forgot it works that way.
Yeah. Carolina League and South Atlantic League. Right now, Greenville is in first place in their division and Salem's in second place in their division, but
Salem's both of those leagues. Behind.
Yeah, both of those leagues reset the standings mid-year and then have second-half standings. So, not quite. Portland's in last place. They're not going to make the playoffs. Pawtucket was in first place, and they're kind of falling off a little bit. But anyway, digression. To me, I like to see at least 300 plate appearances out of a guy at a level, unless, like we mentioned, they are a college guy that might get pushed. For example, we've seen some of these college guys like Sam Travis skip Greenville almost completely in their first full season. With pitchers, with a starter, I'm trying to remember, what do we usually see out of a starter before they get promoted? About 120, 150? Or maybe not 150. Maybe about 100. 80 to 100.
No, I was going to say like 80.
Yeah, 80 to 100 maybe at a level. If they're dominating, then they could get the push.
I'm looking at Henry Owens, for example. His was 104 in Salem before he got promoted, and then 120 in Portland.
But he also had 30 the year before. Don't forget that. So that was really 150 in Portland before.
Oh, yeah, true. But yeah, so I'd say, yeah, probably 100.
About 100 before you really start looking at a guy. And that's career. That's year over year. So if you get 50 in season one, 50 in season two.
That was year.
Oh, see, I don't look at it that way. Because, for example, if you look at a Ty Buttrey, he's a guy who in his career, he only had 22 innings in Greenville this year, but he had 46 there last year, and he went back down to Lowell for 11. He had been at Lowell for 72. Those levels really aren't that different. I think it's a little different when you're talking about Lowell Greenville because those levels are so close. But, Buttrey, you can't say, he only had 22 innings pitched in Greenville. You have to factor in the 46 last year that get him up to close to 70. And then the fact that he had so many in Lowell, I think, that factors in as well.
With pitchers, it seems there's a definite difference between college arms and high school guys because we mentioned Owens was over 100 at each level. Brian Johnson, on the other hand, granted, part of this is also injury related, but he threw 35 innings at Salem. And 70 in Greenville, and now he's in Pawtucket. So it was kind of one of those things where if you're looking at a college guy, it's like it's better to have them blast through low A and high A and then get to double A and give them more time there because that's more age-appropriate talent, like appropriate level for them versus the high school guys who it's a slower progression, obviously.
Yeah, because if you look at Johnson's progression, he should have only spent about a month in Greenville, period. He was in Greenville for 15 games when they were probably only planning on him being there for half of that as a first-round college pick. So that kind of gets factored in. The other thing that we should mention is that you can't really tell by looking at the stats. There could be certain development goals that the club is looking for a guy to work on or achieve before moving up that don't necessarily bear out in the numbers. Could be defensive, for example. Ben Moore is a guy that we've already mentioned as a guy whose bat might be ready for Salem, but he's learning to catch again. Not that he has never caught before, but he's learning to become a professional catcher. That's going to keep him in Greenville for however long he's down there. And that's not going to bear out no matter how well he's hitting. Other guys, it might be they're hitting great, but their plate approach is crap, or they're pitching great, but their mechanics still tend to get out of whack a little bit for an inning at a time or something. And conversely, a guy's stats might not be that great, but he's hitting his development goals. The Red Sox are, you know, they want him to work on certain development goals at another level that they think he can handle at that next level. You know, so it's that kind of a thing where, and they're not saying the Red Sox are always right. Don't get me wrong. I think we get maybe, you know, labeled a little bit as apologists for the club sometimes, or at least I do. It's not that we're saying the Red Sox are always right by doing that, but we're saying that we don't have the data that the club has, seeing a guy every day firsthand, having a coaching staff to evaluate the player, having their own scouts that'll just might, you know, will pop in and see the team and be able to evaluate them, that we don't get to see. Even Ian and Chaz and Matt getting to as many games as they get to, they're not there every day. Don't freak out because a guy's numbers are great and he's not getting promoted. It could also just be no room at the next level. You know, looking, for example, at the Pawtucket lineup, it's going to be really hard for a guy like Jansen Witte or Carlos Asuaje to move up this year because there just isn't a whole lot of room there. There are guys that they need to get at-bats in that lineup that, for example, Garen Cecchini isn't playing third base at all right now because they want to get Luis Jimenez some at-bats there. You know, Sean Coyle was starting to learn the outfield a little bit. He's on the DL right now, but when he comes back, he's going to play second in outfield. You've got Jackie Bradley down there still, Bryce Brents. These are all guys that they want to get at-bats for. So, you know, don't freak out when Jansen Witte's numbers are whatever they are in Portland, beyond what we've said about him in the past, about whether or not he projects as a major leaguer. There's nowhere to put him in Pawtucket. Pawtucket is finishing school for the majors. He's not going to play in the majors this year. It doesn't matter whether he gets promoted there in May, June, August, or at all this season. So don't freak out. And I guess it's time to wrap it up. We want to thank you guys again for downloading. Should mention really briefly, today, May the 30th, is opening day in the Dominican Summer League. Some guys to keep an eye on down there. Really, the only two that I would say to really keep an eye on down there are pitchers for DSL Red Sox 1, Christopher Acosta, and DSL Red Sox 2, Anderson Espinoza. Those are the two really big bonus babies down there. And there are a number of guys down there. If you look at our international signings page, you can see which guys got large or large-ish bonuses that are in the Dominican Summer League. Some guys that got, you know, six figures that I should mention. Junior Espinoza, righty out of Venezuela. Elwin Tejada got $300,000 out of the Dominican Republic. There's some other guys out of Nicaragua that got six-figure bonuses who are also pitchers. But you can see all those. Again, that's if you want to go straight to the site, it's SoxProspects.com/international.htm. That'll show you those. And then you can see Yoan Moncada's ridiculous $31.5 million signing bonus that's on there. But there are... yeah, anyways, check those out on that page. That has all the bonuses. But Espinoza and Acosta, Espinoza's from Venezuela, Acosta's from the Dominican, both right-handed pitchers, both got over $1.5 million. So those are the guys to keep an eye on. But also generally, don't worry too much about Dominican Summer League statistics. They don't mean a whole lot. It's basically glorified Legion ball in the U.S. So... personally, before I worry too much about guys, I want to see him in the U.S. You know, for example, we talked about Daniel Gonzalez and spring training. His numbers in the Dominican were great, but not really expecting a whole lot out of him based on the scouting profile. So, but again, hey, it's another couple of teams to follow. And at this point of the Skype recording, my audio started sounding super staticky and nobody bothered to tell me. So at this point, I will just remind everybody, the MLB draft is on June the 8th through the 10th. We're going to try to do a preview and or review of the draft on the podcast, get a guest or two on here maybe to talk about that. We're working on some things. No promises, though, but we'll try and do something there. Also, want to thank you for downloading. Please subscribe, rate, and review. It really helps us out. We appreciate it. Very easy way in which you can help us, help spread word of the podcast to the masses. Emails to podcast@soxprospects.com. We'll get those on the next podcast if you send them in. Thank you, everybody, for hitting the download button and listening in. We'll be back in your eardrums soon.